This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
This is
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture on the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Bienvenidos.
Atenea Americana.
Welcome. Bienvenidos.
From Stanford to the world.
Vámonos muchachos a correr sabana. Vámonos muchachos a correr sabana. A correr sabana. El cocuy que alumbra toda la montaña. El cocuy que alumbra toda la montaña.
Vámonos muchachos.
And today we have Dr. Marianne Duan. She is the superintendent of the Santa Clara County Office of Education, and she's here to talk to us about some events and about the latest news from the Santa Clara County Board of Education. Stay with us to learn more about this, and remember that this and all our shows are at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. Stay with us.
Yo quisiera ser como el aeroplano que vuela en invierno, igual que en verano, que vuela en invierno, igual que en verano.
And today we have Dr. Marianne Duan. She is the superintendent of the Santa Clara County Office of Education. And well, anyone to know more about education locally, I don't know who that is, but she is the one. And she is here to tell us a lot of the efforts that the County of Education is doing during this spring to engage a community and
students,
to engage them more into learning. And they have a lot of amazing events that are coming. So for that, welcome and thank you very much for being back here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here. As County Superintendent of Schools, I love these opportunities to talk with the community and share some of the efforts that we have going on to promote youth voice and engage with our students.
So you're starting this April very hard with a lot of very interesting things. So what is happening? There is a summit coming on environmental literacy.
Yes, we have a number of events scheduled for the month of April. It's a very busy time for student engagement, as we are preparing young people to graduate in May and moving on, wrapping up the school year. April is an important month for students because of our efforts around youth voice, voter registration, and the environment. So I have a number of things I'd love to share with you today. And I wanted to start by just kind of telling a little bit more about why these types of efforts are so important and why our office is so involved. First and foremost, our students, we have over 200,000 students in Santa Clara County who are between the ages of 10 and 19. And so their voices are really vital to our efforts. And research shows that it is incredibly valuable to have youth voice be a part of our efforts for student engagement, to foster feelings of self-worth, and to build leadership skills that prepare young people for active involvement in civic life. And studies have also shown that involving young people in civic affairs strengthens our democracy, and it cultivates really important critical thinking skills and leads to better educational outcomes. And so because we highly value and recognize youth voice and its importance in creating inclusive, equitable, and resilient communities, we've been anchoring a lot of our initiatives in Youth Voice and co-creating some of them with our students. So you mentioned the Environmental Literacy Summit, so I'd love to start with that. This will be our third annual Environmental Literacy Summit. It is part of our dedication to bringing students together along with school leaders, parents, and community partners to explore innovative approaches to environmental education and climate resilience. And so we're hosting this third annual Environmental Literacy Summit on Saturday, April 27th from 9 to 3 at the Santa Clara County Office of Education. Our theme this year is Building Climate Resiliency Together. And the themes will focus on reducing our negative environmental impacts, supporting healthy school communities, including supporting climate resilient school campuses, and providing environmental and climate literacy education. So it's really exciting. We have a strong commitment to nurturing environmentally conscious leaders, and some of our students are the most environmentally conscious leaders in our community. Our goal is to empower them with knowledge and tools to become stewards of the environment and to do so alongside educators, policymakers, and community. And I wanted to mention just a couple of our keynote speakers. If you would like to know more about what will be happening at the summit, one of our inspirational keynote speakers will be Kelly Lay. She is a first-generation educator, an author, and a change maker in the climate education space. Dr. Lay currently leads the UC-CSU Environmental and Climate Change Literacy Projects. And also Violet Wolf-Sena is the founder and executive director of Climate Change Communities, an organization that supports under-resourced communities of color who are at the front line of climate change and sea level rise. So it'll be very inspiring to hear from both of them as keynote speakers at the summit.
Wow, that's great. And I remember, I think it went 2 years ago, and you also have some youth that were very impressive. I was impressed with a girl who gave an amazing speech, and she was having some sort of a program that she started. So there is also going to be a lot of participation from the kids.
Yes, we'll have a number of youth panels as well as youth keynote speakers, and they'll be sharing some of their initiatives. We'll be hearing about some very specific initiatives on local school campuses that have been led by students. And our Silicon Valley Youth Climate Action Group will also be present and on hand to share some of their amazing work that is being led by students.
Yeah, that's a great program that keeps having more and more local awards. And I remember 2 years ago also, our city gave a special award for that. Sunnyvale gave some sort of Murphy Award or something to that group because they did an amazing project.
Yeah, the impact of what the students are doing is just phenomenal. And so the summit will be a great opportunity to hear more about it. While youth will be a very core part of our Environmental Literacy Summit, the event is not limited to students. It is for everyone who cares about the future of our planet, including educators, leaders, and board members, are also invited. And we really believe that the more we understand our connection to the environment, the more the possibilities to influence how those connections impact our health and our planet will develop. And so we invite students and families to join, to share their ideas and to take action together. Again, it's April 27th from 9 to 3. Registration is required, but I do want to let everyone know that students are free. So registration, while required, there's no fee for students in grades 3 to 12 to attend the summit.
Perfect. And you also will have, well, at least 2 years ago, I remember there was between panels and keynotes, there was an area with programs on education and some vendors and some programs that the district and the county had.
We'll have a lot of our partners and vendors present. They'll be on hand to share information. We'll have different booths where examples will be shared, resource materials, opportunities to apply for grants or receive other resources to support some of those initiatives. They'll all be on hand that day. And to learn more, you can visit sccoe.org. up on our main page in the banner, you'll see all the information about the Environmental Literacy Summit, how to register, the types of events and activities that will be happening, and some examples of the amazing work that young people are doing in the county.
Great. I was looking at that page, which had, you know, all this information, and it also linked to some programs that you guys have related to gardening and also training for the teachers to how to improve that. Do you want to tell us a little bit about anything related to that?
Yes, while we are incredibly proud of our Environmental Literacy Summit, we focus on environmental and climate change work throughout the entire year. Mm-hmm. So we make a heavy emphasis in April, Earth Day, wrapping up the school year. But throughout the year, we are supporting these initiatives through teacher training and supporting through what we call communities of practice. In the communities of practice, teachers come together to learn about the science standards, some of the other standards that support advancing these efforts in the school community, as well as how teachers and community members can work together to promote climate resilient schools. One of the great outgrowths of that has been our Growing Gardens initiative. And through the Growing Gardens initiative, we have hundreds of schools throughout the county that have either started or expanded school gardens on their campus and connecting that school garden work to the curriculum. It's really empowering to see how young people are at the forefront of that work and how they're integrating some of the garden's work into some of the other state law changes. For example, we have school communities that have started composting programs as part of their school garden work. And they're taking food waste from their cafeteria and putting that into the composting. They're learning about the cycles of gardening. They're learning about culture and community and that whole cycle of earth, of protecting their planet and avoiding waste on campus. It's really inspiring. We also have some ways in which the Growing Gardens initiative is promoting student wellness and how the use of outdoor space can promote an overall sense of well-being.
That's amazing. Good. And then other than this summit, you are also going to have a very big event related to democracy coming.
Every year we invest heavily in our young people through the Power of Democracy initiative. We started this initiative about 7 years ago after we did a countywide study and collaboration with school district leaders, superintendents, parents, electeds, and students, and identified that some attention needed to be paid to civic engagement and how we might improve the opportunities and increase the opportunities for students to be involved civically and to learn more through their curriculum. And each year, we celebrate this effort through our Power of Democracy program, and we have a special event each year. So I wanted to share just a little bit more about the Power of Democracy initiative overall, as well as our special event that's coming up. Through the Power of Democracy, we foster civic engagement and try to instill a sense of responsibility and civic duty. We connect it to the curriculum and try to also promote opportunities for students to learn about the state seal of civic engagement and how it is open to all students. Each and every student in the junior and senior level can be working on earning the state seal of civic engagement. So it's a very inclusive opportunity. One of the things we do is the special event that you just mentioned. It will be on Wednesday, April 24th from 8 to 10:30 at the Santa Clara County Office of Education. I do want to note that this is an invitation-only event, but it is widely invited. Members of superintendents, our school board members, community leaders, and other electeds. And we'll be focusing on the democratic process, the importance of voting, and how youth can make their voices heard in local and national issues. Our theme this year is also connected to the work we're doing in the environment. The theme is Youth Innovation for Sustainability. We'll be convening a number of key leaders in Santa Clara County and spotlighting the power of youth voice and some of the actions that youth have been taking to drive impactful, sustainable change. And our youth will be engaging in activities that showcase the creativity and passion that they're displaying. We have some youth panel discussions as well as student performances. Our keynote speaker for Power of Democracy is Andrea McKenzie, who's the general manager of the Open Space Authority. And she's coming to share insights on conserving nature and connecting communities as part of civic engagement. And we have a lineup of compelling guest speakers and presentations where students will be engaged and they're going to learn from local community leaders and hear from local policy makers, including Senator Dave Cortese, Assemblymember Ash Kalra, and Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors President Susan Ellenberg. And of course, we'll be celebrating educational excellence with awards and commendations for some outstanding students, some outstanding educators, as well as some district leaders. And as I mentioned, this is an invitation-only event. It's one of the things that we do under Power of Democracy. But if someone is interested in more information, they can send an email to gpo@sccoe.org.
Perfect. And with this, so all these leaders are going to be part of this, are going to give speeches, and then is people going to be able to see a report of what happened that day, or are you going to make like a brief newsletter, so how are you going to communicate whatever comes from that?
Once the event is over, we will have some video clips and a video reel from the event, and we always post some of the information, and we'll be widely celebrating and acknowledging the winners of the special awards and for civic engagement.
Great. And what else are you going to have this spring? Well, then the graduations will come in a couple of months, so I suppose it's normally a very busy time of the year.
It is a very busy time of year for parents and students. As you mentioned, graduations will be coming up as well. We, as part of Power of Democracy, will be also promoting the 2 weeks in April where young people are encouraged to pre-register to vote and to register to vote. And that is the weeks of April 15th through the 26th. We call them Youth Voter Registration Week, but it's actually longer than a week. And it allows for the last 2 weeks of both April and September to really focus and encourage young people to have conversations about registering to vote and participating in voting. So during those 2 weeks in April, April 15th through the 22nd or 26th, we'll be working with schools, community organizations, and local government to encourage eligible students to register to vote if they're 18 or older, or to pre-register to vote if they're 16 to 18 years old, as well as encouraging them to participate in upcoming elections. So in California, youth who are 16 and 17 years old are eligible to pre-register to vote, and those who do will have their voter registration automatically activated when they turn 18. And they start to receive voting materials at that time as well. And so it's our goal to pre-register all qualified 11th grade U.S. history students in their classrooms before the next election, as well as to introduce the process and ignite civic action for those who are not yet able to vote at this time.
Yes. And what kind of programs do inform the kids and engage them in civic life are throughout the year?
There are a number of things that happen throughout the year to encourage young people to participate. Some of what we were talking about earlier with the Environmental Literacy Summit and some of our work with the Power of Democracy is a celebration or culmination of activities from the entire year. So young people are encouraged to to earn their state seal of civic engagement by participating in civic actions, developing a project, being involved in community service, attending school board meetings, and advocating for policies that matter to them, and receiving the support of adults in their life to be actively engaged in this way. And the Youth Voter Registration Week, as I mentioned, also occurs in September. That's another activity throughout the year where we engage with young people and promote their leadership development and civic engagement.
Great. So can you explain to our listeners a little bit more about what the district, the county Board of Education does in difference to every school district? You do take care of schools that are not, don't belong to the district, like charter schools. Then you have the justice department, schools like other type of different schools that are in your jurisdiction instead of the district school districts.
Yes, as county superintendent of schools, we have a very different role. There's one county superintendent in each of the 58 counties in the state of California, and county superintendents have a number of duties that are very different than other positions in each county or in the state. And so we work very collaboratively with our local school districts to help ensure that schools have the support they need for their local control accountability plans, and also to support their budget development and ensure the fiscal health of all of the school districts. We're not a school district at the County Office of Education, but we do operate court schools for students who are enrolled in court schools because they have been assigned to either Juvenile Hall or Blue Ridge Camp Detention Center by the courts. And so we have a very important role to support young people in ensuring that they have an equitable public education during the time that they're enrolled in our court schools. Yeah. So those are just a couple of examples of how county offices are different than local school districts.
And also, if kids kind of thrive with a regular school, but still the law ask for a full education for every child, that for any reason he is not thriving in a regular school, behavioral issues. There are other schools that are outside of the purview of the school district, but are are supported by you directly.
Yes, we additionally operate a couple of community schools that can be a support, and we do that in partnership as well with our local school districts and accept referrals to support students in those community schools.
That's great. And how do you get to be a superintendent? What is the, do you need to be a teacher first? And I know that there is another way to do it if you are also a counselor or a different type of education professional.
So in California, to be a county superintendent of schools, you will have to have earned an administrative credential. So typically the path is that we all start as teachers. So we have a teaching credential. That's really important because county superintendents are also responsible for overseeing the credentialing process for the teachers who serve in the classrooms in the county, and to monitor the credentials of all of our teachers in the classroom. So it's been important as a policy of the state of California to have county superintendents who have been teachers and have also served as administrators. And typically that means they've been a superintendent and then have demonstrated their efforts, their role by serving as both a teacher and administrator and holding that credential.
Great. Great. And our county of education, they do give a lot of, they have like a sea of information for our districts, and what are some of the programs that you have to support our district and to train the teachers that teach our kids?
There's a lot of professional development that our office provides. And again, we do a lot of this work in partnership with our districts. We try to understand what their priorities are and their needs, and we assist in professional development. We also assist in recruitment and encouraging people to come into the education profession as well. So I'd like to share just three examples. In the area of professional development, I mentioned earlier about the State Seal of Civic Engagement. That's a new initiative, and through our History and Social Sciences Department, we're providing professional development and technical assistance to help local school districts develop their criteria for the state seal, as well as helping teachers enhance their curriculum to promote these efforts amongst students. And I want to acknowledge six of our school districts that are currently developing local criteria: Eastside Union High School District, Los Gatos Saratoga High School District, Santa Clara Unified, Milpitas Unified, San Jose Unified, and Gilroy Unified. I mentioned that another initiative we do is to support recruitment efforts. We just recently held our annual educator recruitment fair. And this is, again, something we do in partnership with our local districts. We had almost 1,000 people come to look at teacher openings and other position counseling, early care and education vacancies within the districts, and apply for those positions. And by coming together, we're able to leverage our resources on behalf of our districts and really help with that recruitment effort. And the third area I wanted to share as a service that we provide is called Step Into Education. This is an opportunity for community members to learn what it takes to become a teacher or a counselor or a nurse or an early care and education provider in public education, and provide all the resources that they need to get on that path. That could be high school students who are thinking about becoming an educator. It could be career changers, individuals who maybe have already had a fulfilling career in a different area, and they're considering changing careers and looking into education. And it could also be individuals who've recently moved into the state of California and are looking for an opportunity to make a difference. So Step Into Education happens twice a year. We do it in August and typically in February as well.
Thank you for listening to Atenea Americana, your house of culture in the radio and online. In this bilingual show, I bring you every week 1 hour in English and 1 hour in Spanish, opening a window to the cultural Hispanic world. You can hear in the intro and at the final of the show, as well as right now, music from the legend of Latin jazz, Oscar Hernandez. This and all my shows are in StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org, where I wait for your comments. I invite you to be part of this.
Yeah, we have, for example, one individual in our district that she was working for the school, I think as a paraeducator, and she had another previous career, and she liked it, so she went through the process, and now she's going to be teaching next year with her credentials.
Well, congratulations to her. That's exactly what we hope to hear, that these initiatives have an impact, and they create that pathway for individuals who want to be involved in public education. We also have a great number of resources through our educator preparation program, including some that have scholarships attached to them to help those who are interested in becoming a teacher.
Yeah. I know that in the district, for example, there are special programs for kids who don't have the same a path that other kids through high school, and there are schools like Metroid that have you know, they can have a more career focus start, and then they can decide if they're going to keep going to college or they're just going to go to the trade that they have already been taught about. Can you tell us a little bit about that other path?
Yes, as county superintendent, one of the opportunities that I have is to see the richness of the programs available throughout our county, including those that are not operated by the County Office of Education. And MetroEd is a great example of a career technical education pathway that is rich, is diverse, and that provides opportunities for young people to think both about college and career. So there, through MetroEd, a number of training programs, certificate programs are available in a variety of careers and fields, including medicine and public safety. And young people who complete that program can sometimes go straight into a career or technical field. And in some cases, they may choose to pursue a community college or a four-year degree with that strong foundation that they've received in CTE as well.
And but the county of education is K-12, or you are also engaged into community college?
I'm so glad you asked that question. We at the County Office of Education, we are actually a birth through age 22 entity. As county superintendent, I'm also very involved with the community colleges and have some work and responsibilities that I do in partnership with our community colleges as well. But I would be very delighted to mention our early care and education work that we do for our birth through age 5 young people. And some of that is through our Head Start and State Preschool Initiative. The Santa Clara County Office of Education is the largest Head Start and early Head Start provider in the Bay Area. And additionally, we are leading the way with universal pre-kindergarten and TK expansion efforts throughout the county. So lots to talk about there, but an important responsibility that our office has to enrich that pathway of services and access to education and promoting the early and healthy development of young people.
And what do you mean by provider? People go to the county, or you administrate the birth to five, like first five, programs? How exactly do you provide those services?
There are a couple of different ways that our office provides the early care and education services. Some are direct to families. Families can apply for eligibility into Head Start, Early Head Start, and our state preschool programs, and they can learn more about their potential eligibility through our Steps to Success website. There you can, families can get access to child care through the Resource and Referral Network. They can find out which child care providers are in their area and meet their criteria. They can also learn about services that we provide direct to families through our Migrant Education Preschool, Head Start, Early Head Start, and State Preschool. The second way that we provide services is through technical assistance and support that we provide directly to school districts. And the third way is through the support we provide to child care providers, where we provide training, access to resources and material, help them get licensed so they can be a child care provider. And we manage a lot of the support that they need through our local planning council. All this information is available on our website.
Yes, I remember one of my kids' preschool. She wanted to have one in her house, and she went to the county and she got all the training. She got continuous training because she was always taking some extra classes and extra courses about everything that she wanted to have, something new that was coming up, and she wanted to learn about all of that through the a county of education, but she also got the resources from, I don't know, I suppose it's the county or the, like the instead of the county of education, the actual city council or the county, for actually renew her house to be able to have a preschool there. And, you know, all these renovations and spaces that were special for kids, and her, the playground in her backyard, and all of that was founded by the state. And now she has been, well, my kid is now 15 and she was starting back there.
That's incredible to hear. We'd love to see how that collaboration between the County Office of Education, the counties, the cities, and some of the resources that we receive through the state are helping to expand that childcare opportunity for families.
Yeah, and it is a really big help to find good and affordable care. And that's really for pretty much the whole society, not just for the child. The child, of course, but if the child is safe and the families can afford it, then everything in the society will move forward, and the women can go back to work if they wish to. And it's really an engine that makes thrive the community.
It is so important. It's important for families. It's about economic development. Child care, early care and education is the foundation that really helps young people and their families on that path and readiness for kindergarten and beyond. We know it's really essential to the health and well-being of a community to have strong, affordable, quality childcare. And so we're so happy to be a part of it at our office.
Yes. So tell me about other programs that you wanted to highlight today.
I had one other spring summit that I wanted to mention directly to youth. So I hope some of our youth are listening and that they'll take advantage of some of these opportunities or ask their school sites for more information. But there is a youth leadership summit coming up. This is about the nurturing of the next generation, I like to say, and helping them, again, with civic engagement. This Youth Leadership Summit is also on Saturday, April 27, 2024. It's from 8:30 to noon, and it's going to be hosted at Oak Grove High School in the main gym. I'll be there in the morning. It is the same day as our Environmental Literacy Summit, so students have a couple of choices here for engagement on that day. This year's summit is going to be centered on student wellness. We've heard from young people that the environment is important to them. They want to be active and lead in addressing climate change, and they see that as both civic engagement and promoting their own wellness. And they're also very interested in promoting wellness in other ways. So this Youth Leadership Summit is going to be designed to inspire young leaders to improve wellness in their schools and communities and to learn about related policy development. The Youth Leadership Summit is going to be at Oak Grove High School because young people have visited the Wellness Center that is at Oak Grove High School, and they want to offer tours of their Wellness Center to other young people in the county. The day will include wellness activities and speakers and opportunities to network. And one of the core objectives is to empower students to be catalysts for change in their communities. And it's a chance for students to amplify their voices and advocate for change. The tour of the Wellness Center will give students an opportunity to learn about all the different types of programs and services that are offered at wellness centers, including those that are available before, during, and after school, the different types of groups, and with that heavy emphasis on wellness and well-being. And by familiarizing themselves with these resources, we think students will be better equipped to take proactive steps for their own health and well-being. So this event, again, is Saturday, April 27th from 8:30 to 12. Just a note, the Youth Leadership Summit is not open to adults. It is only for our students. Mm-hmm. It's intended for high school students engaged already or who are interested in leadership, and registration is free. To learn more, students can visit tinyurl.com SYRSWBAS, or visit the Santa Clara County Office of the County Executive. So this summit is being done with partners at the County Executive's Office at the County of Santa Clara. So it's a great opportunity for young people.
So, and can you explain to our audience a little bit more about what wellness centers are? We have a couple. They are great in our district that we go through a grant. So what are wellness centers?
Wellness centers are a newer initiative that we've been doing to promote school campuses as centers of wellness and to have place-based opportunities for young people to have access to services and to be really accessible in terms of a focus on wellness and well-being. And so they're, you know, calming spaces. They are places where young people feel safe and included. They can go and get access to curriculum. They might engage in groups. They may be able to receive access to counseling if that's something that they're interested in. And it's really a place-based approach to ensuring young people can learn all the skills that they need to promote their overall health and well-being.
Yes, we have a couple of them, and they are calming, very calming spaces. We have one for middle school and one for an elementary school. And you get in and you see, you know, these flush scenes where they can sit. There is always a couple of facilitators there that may engage with the kids if they wish to. Otherwise, they can just go there and spend their recess or just have 5 minutes to feel better before they go back to the classroom. And they are really relaxing and, you know, very open spaces, so they can engage or not. They are not, you know, they don't have to talk with an adult about however they're feeling, but they are encouraged to talk about why they're feeling angry or anxious, or they felt the need to go to one of these spaces.
The Wellness Center work really came out of conversations with students who said that's exactly what they needed. They wanted to be seen. They wanted to be heard. They wanted a safe place that they could just drop in and to also begin to take away some of the stigma that can sometimes be associated with just those regular feelings that we all have, you know, and young people developing, they're learning their habits of wellness. To have a space where they can go and say, yeah, you know, I had a rough day or this thing happened to me and I need to talk to somebody, or I just want to learn about meditation, or I just want to learn about how to calm my nervousness or anxieties or things that may be just a normal part of development, but each young person experiencing it in the way that they do, wanting to have access to a safe place with a healthy curriculum.
Great. And so the these grants, because we have a couple of spaces, as I say before, out of our 10 schools, these grants, they have they come with a couple of years of counseling, salaries, and also how to set up the space, and then the schools learn and they are supposed to support it after what? After that. So are they right now open to all ADA schools? They have to apply for that, or is it something that every school can apply and have? Or I suppose, like everything in, you know, public education, there is not enough money to for everybody to have everything. So how is the process to get one of these in your school, if anyone wish to have one of those in their schools and they feel they don't have it, what do they need to do?
So there are many pathways into a wellness center establishment on a campus, and our office can be of support to any school. It is my hope and dream, my vision, that every school campus in the county could have a wellness center in place, elementary, middle, and high school. I love that you mentioned that there's already a wellness center on an elementary and middle school campus in your area. And because we know it works, we know the model is effective, and there have been various types of grants that have been coming online to help districts get started if they wanted to. We also know that in some places, parents have been really involved in helping to secure additional funds or to partner with the district to secure resources to open wellness centers. On our website, at our youth health and wellness page, there are toolkits that school sites can utilize to start planning a wellness center. And my office also regularly sends out information to school district leaders about emerging grant opportunities to help with that funding. Another great opportunity that's coming online is what we're referring to as the fee schedule. And this fee schedule is a state initiative that is designed to establish certain fees for services that schools will be providing at or near their campus, where they'll be able to get reimbursed for some of those services. And just another opportunity to potentially secure some funding in support of wellness centers.
Great. Now, I think we have like a couple of minutes to talk about, I just thought about something that is very related to this idea. And is this new idea that the state is opening for everybody, this idea of community college, community schools. I think, the Office of Education, your Office of Education, also has information about this and can tell us what is a community school and what is the difference with the regular school.
The state, I think shortly after COVID, put a big push into this idea, this model that we refer to as community schools. And the community school model is about how we can center the school in community, leverage partners and resources to bring more collaboration and more access to children and families via the school campus. And really thinking about the school as a community, thinking about the school as the center of the community, and being a place where community can also engage with students, families, and educators. It's a lot about developing partnerships and collaboration and reducing some of the barriers to access that sometimes educators and families experience. So it's a really powerful model that is really designed to also improve outcomes for students and families. We're pretty early in the implementation of community schools in the state of California. The governor put about $4 billion into this initiative a few years ago, and we're just a couple of years into implementation. There is a lot of information available on our website as well. We are a regional technical assistance center for community schools implementation, and we're happy to work with any school that is interested in that model.
Perfect. Yes, because there is the idea, I think it's a Maslow, the pyramid, where it says that if the most important basic needs of the child are not met, then he's never going to really go up, you know, and learn everything. So that's kind of the concept, like, well, if they are not fed, if they are very anxious, if they are having a lot of stress, they cannot concentrate in learning. And if teaching is their job, then how are they going to learn if they haven't had breakfast, for example, or if their family is going to this terrific crisis at the moment with housing or with everything, they cannot concentrate and we cannot teach them like that. So if we help to alleviate this, then everything, it will be easier for us to teach them and make them succeed in life.
Absolutely. That Maslow's hierarchy of needs would identify like the importance of those basic needs. And through community schools, we're contemplating how through partnership schools can be a place to address some of those basic needs that young people may bring with them to school, and how we can do it in collaboration with families.
Perfect.
It's a really powerful motto.
So it has been a very informational and great morning for us. So do you want to tell us a little bit more before we close?
Just in conclusion, I'd really love to encourage listeners to stay connected with the SECOE and follow us on social media if you're so inclined. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SCCOE and on Instagram at Santa Clara SCCOE. You can also follow me at SCC Superintendent of Schools. Through our social media, we regularly share updates, provide invitations to upcoming events and valuable resources to keep educators, parents, and our community partners informed and engaged. And I'd love to connect with everyone there.
Perfect. So, and we hope that you enjoy the program, and we hope to have you again.
I would love to come back, and my heartfelt thanks for having me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And this was Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Stanford, 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
This is
Radio Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture on the air and online.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Vuelve pronto.
Atenea Americana.
From Stanford to the world.
Remember to come back soon.
Ciao.
See you later.